सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। Last week, I gave you an introduction of what an Upanishad is, the meaning of the word itself, and the origin, the reason for studying Upanishads, who are the qualified students. The student of the Upanishad is a little bit more qualified than the student of Bhagavad Gita, Arjun. Arjun is at our level, and the Upanishadic students, as you will now come to know from the question itself, they do not ask questions like the ones that Arjun has asked. Arjun asks basic questions, which we can relate to. These questions we will not be able to relate to, but we need to understand them. We will understand them and aspire to reach there someday. Okay? So, we begin the Upanishad today. Kena Upanishad. Kena means by whom, okay? And Kena Upanishad appears in the Samaveda. Every time now we do an Upanishad, we will know which Veda it appears in. Because I told you all the Upanishads appear in the Vedas. So, and there are only four Vedas. So out of the four Vedas, it will appear in one of them. This one is from Samaveda. And I told you Samaveda is a Giti Pradhan. Means it can be sung. That doesn't mean that we are going to sing these verses. I don't know how to sing. I don't even know if there is a meter for these verses. You will also see that Upanishads, there will be no meter. So most of the verses will be chanted in prose. One thing is there may not be a meter at all. And if there is, I may not know it. So no, there will be very little like we did in Bhagavad Gita, like we do in Bhagavad Gita or other Prakaran Granthas. Because they've been written by a person, it's thought about, you know, the rhyme and everything is being thought about. Okay. This belongs to the Talavkar Shakha. There are Shakhas among the Vedas. And this is the Talavkar Shakha. This is just general information. And it appears in the ninth chapter of the Shakha of the Samaveda. The eight chapters, the Guru has talked about karma and upasana. So basically what we have studied in Bhagavad Gita, same thing, karma, then doing karma yoga, then doing karma with upasana, with an understanding, which will give purity of mind, or it will give higher lokas, depending on what the student wants. If the student wants higher lokas, then karma upasana will give him higher lokas, like swarga loka, brahma loka, gandhar, kinnar, whatever that he wishes. But if he is not doing it with that purpose, if he is doing it with the purpose of purifying his own mind so that he can reach the highest, then he gets purity. In this, we see that the student, obviously the students, there are more than one student in this Upanishad. That is another thing that you will find in the Upanishads when you study more. There will be either one student or there'll be many students. Kathopanishad has only one student, Nachiketas. Whereas this one has many students and the names are not given. There will be some Upanishads where the names have been given of the students. Not only the names, their father's names also have been given. So it will all be varied. Like, you know, it doesn't matter. The name and all is just information. It really doesn't matter to us even whether the name is given or not, whether there is one or more students, etc. The Guru is always one. In the Upanishad, the Guru will always be one, but he may have more than one student. Okay. Even the Guru's name, some of the Upanishads, yes, the Guru's in Kathopanishad, if you see, it's Lord Yama. So the Guru's name is also there and the student's name is also there. But in other Upanishads, the Guru's name may not be there. So we don't know who the Guru is. We don't know who the students are. But always the Upanishad is in the form of a dialogue. So even if there are only verses, please, we have to understand there is some guru who is telling some student or students. So in this case, the first eight chapters, when karma and upasana has been explained, the students what happens when the students are studying, like we'll see that in Taittiriya Upanishad when we do, they will study karma. Karma means all for material benefit. When we say karma, karma is for, like, you know, our school education, like getting a degree, getting a job, etc. So there are many students who start at that level, and then once they get this knowledge, they will leave. They say, this is what we came for. We know how to now get a job and, you know, and this thing, and we will go. Then there are some who want to learn a bit higher studies. So then they do karma upasana. And then there are some students, very few students, who want to learn the highest. So they will stay with the guru. This is how we'll see. In this case, these students, whoever now are going to be asking questions, they stayed with the guru after this karma and upasana was explained. Their purpose was to purify their mind so that they get the highest knowledge. And so then they stayed. Karma yoga and then karma upasana has to be done before one reaches this state. Now, we might look at people, masters like Raman Maharshi, and we might say, but he never did any karma and upasana because at 16 he just realized and then he left everything. But understand that he has probably done it in his past life. Okay, so there is no escaping from that. So that is how this goes. And it begins, the actual invocation begins on page 45 of the text. So first, as we will always see that there will always be a Shanti mantra in the beginning of the text. In Prakaran Granthas, we see that there is an invocation verse either to God or to Guru. And in Upanishad, it will always be a Shanti mantra. And this Shanti mantra is specific to that Veda. That is also there. So it will be the same Shanti. So you will see different Upanishads, but same Shanti mantra, because it belongs to that same Veda. So every Shanti mantra is, every Veda has a particular Shanti mantra. So all the Upanishads that belong to that Veda will have that same Shanti mantra. All right. So here Gurudev has started, the Upanishad starts with these two important Shanti mantras, as Gurudev says. They both belong to the Samaveda. So, and we know this one. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejas Vinavadhi Tamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So Om Sahana Avatu. Saha together. Okay. So this Shanti mantra means where the both teacher and the taught are saying this. Together, may we together be protected. Avatu is to protect. May we be protected. Protected from what? So as we see, and we have always chanted the Shanti three times, may we be protected from these three types of calamities that can come upon us. So one is adhyatmic. One, actually, if you go by the Shanti, then the first Shanti we say very loudly. So there is Adi Bhautik. There is Adi Daivik, and then there is Adhyatmik, right? So Adi Bhautik is like, in our term, may there not be a tornado, may there not be an ice storm, snowstorm, where we are unable to come. So forces, unseen forces beyond our control, Adi Bhautik. They control, there's nothing we can do. Hurricane came, snowstorm came, nobody can do anything, but may we be protected from that. Then Adi Daivik is from seen forces. So if I'm right now, may my computer not fail. Now in this case, because we are not driving, none of us is driving anywhere. Otherwise you would say, may I not have an accident on the way to the class? It's seen, something seen. You know, maybe my mistake, somebody else's. But in this particular case, I would say, I hope the electricity doesn't fail, the internet doesn't fail, computer doesn't fail. That would be seen forces, and adhyatmic from within. So may I not feel lazy? May I not have a fever? May I not have a headache? That way. Okay. And both of us, the teacher and the taught, because if a teacher is also not well, then cannot teach. And if the student is not well, then he will not be able to understand. So the first avatu, protect. So may we be protected, and we means sah, both teacher and taught. Sahanau bhunaktu. So may we both bhunaktu bhuj dhatu, to enjoy. So may we enjoy each other's company. as I was reading, you know, sometimes when we used to be in college and different professors would come, then some professors would really like, oh, he's really nice, she's really nice. And some are like, oh God, now is it him teaching us? So we should be able to, teacher also should be feel happy to see the students, and the student also should feel happy. If the student doesn't feel happy looking at the teacher, then like whatever, you know, this person is saying is not going to go in my head. So that's why the prayer is that maybe both enjoy, the teacher and the taught, maybe both enjoy each other's company. Now, bhunaktu bhuj dhatu also means to protect. So why is it being said that, again, we said protect once from the calamities. Now, why this thing is being repeated? Here, for protection, what is meant is, let this lineage, guru parampara shishya, be protected. May this knowledge be protected. Now, is there anything to, what does it mean to protect the knowledge? Like, you cannot protect the book. Book can get burnt or lost or torn or anything. This knowledge protected means it has to continue. Then it is known as protected, because knowledge never gets destroyed. One thing, number one, that's the basic principle. Then knowledge by itself can never get destroyed. But the thing is, if it is not disseminated to the people, if it is not told to the people and the people don't know it, then it is as good as destroyed, as good as lost. Okay. So may this knowledge be protected, and how the knowledge will be protected is by protecting the Guru Shishya Parampara, this tradition that has been going on. And that's the reason that Gurudev has set up so many sadhana layers, right? Because he wanted this knowledge protected. That's why his mission was to create teachers. That's why we have so many Swamijis and Acharyas and all that. So that they learn, they come and learn, they have a place to learn in Bombay, in Adsidabari, etc. And then the idea is that they go and tell n number of people. Okay. And this way, the knowledge gets protected. It goes from generation to generation. Saha viryam karavavahe. So viryam is effort. Saha, both of us, may both of us put in effort. So the teacher also is expected to put efforts towards studying the portion. I mean, people like me have to study. Of course, Gurudev and Guruji, they can just read and tell. But the idea is that the teacher also puts in effort to study and explain as best as he or she can. But the student also has a responsibility to make an effort to understand, you know. So make sure that your mind is fresh. You're not feeling lazy. You're not feeling like, oh God, should I be doing this? Should I be in this class? You know, tired. Those kinds of things. When your mind is fresh also, then, because effort is required to understand even, right? So maybe both put efforts. Saha viryam karavavat. Like, I will also, teacher will also put forth effort. Student also is expected to put forth effort. Tejasvina adhitama astu. Tejasvi, let this knowledge be tejas. Tejasvi is a brilliant, bright. Now, what is bright knowledge? It's not like knowledge is shining like a tube light or something. Bright knowledge is that knowledge which will come to you when it is actually needed. When the situation in life, see, now we are studying this, like we studied Bhagavad Gita, right? Karma Yoga we studied, or Bhakti Yoga, whatever that we study there, in your actual life, you must be able to put that in practice. And to put that in practice in actual life, first of all, you need to understand it, right? If you don't even understand what is being told, how you will put it into practice? And second thing is, you have to remember it. So that remembrance, that is called Tejasvi knowledge. That knowledge is bright for me, which I can bring forth when I actually need it in life. So that's why may this knowledge be tejas. Even for the teacher, when he's teaching, may it be bright so that he can explain it to the other people, the students. And the student, may he understand the knowledge, and may it be bright for him so that when he goes out, because you see, when we're sitting here in a very comfortable position and understanding this thing, okay, fine. But when that situation actually comes, how to deal with situations in life? that part, if we can bring this knowledge and then apply that knowledge to that situation, then it will be called as Tejasvi knowledge. So we pray to the Lord that may this knowledge be Tejasvi, means brilliant, bright. May it come to me when I need it. When I go out into the world and when I'm facing situations, may it please come to me, whatever that I've heard and whatever that I have understood. Ma vid vishavahi. Ma is negative. No. Let us not hate each other. This is what it means. So let not there be animosity between the teacher and the taught. Can you ever learn from an enemy? If you have inimical feelings towards the teacher, will you ever listen to what the teacher is saying? Or if the teacher doesn't like the student, you know, oh, I hate. It can't. This knowledge, actually, it is said that more than the heart, more than the head, it needs to go through the heart. And that's why the love for the teacher is extremely essential. Because if something has to penetrate the heart has to become soft. And the heart can only become soft in love. And this, because intellectually understanding this knowledge, it will only be information. Unless it is accompanied with that love for the teacher, which will give faith, until then that knowledge will not become bright, tejasvi. Okay, so this is what it means. May we both be protected from all the three external, one is internal, two external sources. May we enjoy each other's company. May this group, Shishya Parampara, be protected so that the knowledge itself is protected. May we both put efforts together. Let us try hard to understand. Let us try hard to teach. So may we both put efforts and let this knowledge be bright and brilliant so that it will come to us when we need it and maybe not hate each other. Okay. So with that, with this peace invocation, we chant this verse every time. But from next time onwards, I will also chant the next Shanti Mantra, because here this is the next one. Om Apyayantu Mamangani Vak Prana Chakshuhu Shrotramatho Balama Indriyani Cha Sarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Niryakuryam Mama Brahma Niryakarod Anirakaranam Astu Nira Anirakaranam Me Astu Tadatmani Nirate Yaupanishatsu Dharmaste Dharma, dharmaha, te mai santu, te mai santu. Om shanti, shanti, shanti. May my limbs, speech, prana, vital air, eye, ear, strength, and all my senses grow vigorous. All, everything is the Brahman of the Upanishads. May I never deny the Brahman. So this is a prayer by the student to give himself strength. So Mamangani, anga, my anga, my limbs. May my limbs be strong. Why? Not that I can run here and there and do things to get things in the external world. But see, unless my body is fit, I will not be able to sit and study. Okay? I will not be able to sit and meditate. If there is pain here, pain there, then my mind is going to be distracted. It is going to go to that. So for that, he is asking for strength. Not for anything else. May my senses be strong means may they be alert. Because, you know, if I'm feeling sleepy, if I'm feeling lazy, and then, you know, this and that. So may they be alert. Pranas, controlling the physiological functions. All the pranas, may they be functioning properly. Why? Because suppose my digestive prana is not working and I've got a stomachache, then I cannot concentrate. Or because pranas are controlling all the physiological functions. So they need to work properly too. Because if they're not working properly, something in the body is not going to be correct. So, and then what is going to happen is my attention is going to go there. So, vital air, everything is Brahman of the Upanishad. So he, senses grow vigorous. Here grow, not grow means not grow, but be alert, okay? Everything is the Brahman of the Upanishad. So I know, I understand that everything, because you have to understand that the student has done karma upasana and come to this stage. I told you the 8 chapters are over. This is the 9th chapter. So by now he has understood that everything is Brahman. Okay, that's why I tell you that he's not at the stage of Arjun. Arjun has not understood this, right, in Bhagavad Gita, but here he has. And may I never deny, means may I have faith that it is there. May I not deny Brahman, and may Brahman not deny me. So may Brahman not leave me, means I should not be dead, I should be alive to do this. So I pray that I never ever lose faith in Brahman, okay? And Brahman doesn't deny me, so he doesn't leave me. Because while studying, that could happen. Life could go. But may I be there. Okay? All right. Now, with this, the Upanishad starts with the first question, with a question. Okay? Keneshitam patati preshitam manaha kena pranaha prathama preti yuktaha Keneshitam vachamimam vadanti chakshuhu kshrotram kau devo unakti. Disciple. Now, this is a question, so obviously it is from the disciple. It cannot be from the guru. And his question is, Kena, I told you this, different Upanishads are named differently, and each Upanishad has its own reason for the name. Okay, so Kathopanishad, if you take, it belongs to the Katha Shaka of that Upanishad, and therefore it was called Kathopanishad, though Gurudev has said that it's a Katha, because it starts with a story. There's something, other Upanishad called Prashnopanishad, because there are six questions in it, so it is named Prashnopanishad. So we really, there is no particular science to why a particular Upanishad is named the particular name. This particular one is Kena Upanishad, because the first word of the Upanishad is Kena. Kena preshitam kena ishitam patati preshitam manaha. So Kena is the first word, and therefore it becomes Kena Upanishad. Disciple, by whom willed and directed does the mind light upon its objects? Commanded by whom does the main vital air prana proceed to function? By whose will do men utter speech? What intelligence directs the eyes and the ears towards their respective objects? So there are different questions. If you can see that the question is not very, very low. It is pretty high, because the student has already figured out, right? Already figured out that the mind, the pranas, the chakshu kshotram, so eyes, and eyes representing all the organs of perception, kshotram also, and speech, vacha, vak, speech representing all the organs of action, chakshu and kshotra, eyes and ears representing all the organs of perception, they are inert. He has already figured that out. See, we think that they are all live, because we speak, we say, oh, you know, all that. So here he has already figured out that this is all matter. This cannot function on its own. There is somebody else, but I don't know who else it is right now. And that is why the question is beginning right there. So there is no question of him, the guru telling him, you are not the body. He knows that. He knows that I cannot be the body. I cannot be the organs of action, because this is all inert. How can I be inert? I am, I have consciousness. I'm sentient. How can I be this inert matter? And if this inert matter is functioning, because he's saying the mind is running here and there, even without my knowledge, the mind runs away. I don't want the mind to run, yet the mind runs away. So he knows that the mind is running, and it doesn't know why. That's why he says, Kena ishitam. Ishitam is will, desire. By whose desire? Because I don't desire that my mind should run, and yet my mind runs. So he's understood that. There's something else, right? So he has already reflected and figured this out. And then not only will, but preshitam. Preshitam means it's like directed, it's like commanded. So the mind is hearing or knowing some other command, somebody else's command, not mine, because I'm saying pay attention to what is going on, and the mind is thinking of something else. So Ishitam word has been used and Preshitam word also has been used. Ishitam is willed. Okay, so when we say will or when we say desire, will, desire is the same. It doesn't presuppose action. Okay, if I say I desire, that doesn't mean action. Okay, but Preshitam is directed, so it is action. So what he means is that not that this entity, whoever it is, who is willing, who is desiring, that itself is not moving. That itself, it's not like a director directing a movie or something. It is just by the desire alone, this activity is happening. The desirer, whoever that entity is right now, we don't know, Ishitam, whoever is doing this Ishitam, this Ichha, this desire, this will, himself is not moving. See, that also he has figured it out. But as though just sitting at one place, just the desire comes and the mind starts running. Just the desire comes and then the pranas, you know, start functioning. Okay? Pratham preti yukta kenam isham vachamimam vadanti. Like, directed by whom? You know, we find sometimes I don't want to say something and yet I say. It's our experience, my experience. Why did I even say that? Why did I even bother to say? So it's like somebody is pushing us. Somebody is pushing us, right? In the Bhagavad Gita, when we see these kinds of things, we say it is the vasanas that are pushing us. That is one level. Now here he realizes that there is something even subtler than the vasanas which is pushing, right? So by which this speech is speaking, like my tongue is speaking, by who, directed by whom, willed by whom it is speaking. Chakshuhu, eyes, whose under whose direction are they seeing? Under whose direction are the ears seeing? Under whose whole eye, hands, legs, everything, how are they moving? How are they, what intelligence directs the eyes and the ears? Okay, so the question here to question that he's making, he's not asking what is the mind. See, it is not a very basic, what is the basic question would be, oh, what is this mind made up of thoughts, flow of thoughts, all that he knows. He knows all that. He has reflected. He knows that. He's not asking what is the mind. He's not asking what are the eyes, what are their functions, what is the function of this, which we studied basic in Tattva Bodh and all that. All those kinds of questions he's not asking because he knows that all this is inert. He knows all this. Whatever we studied so far, he already knows in one shot that the mind is made of thoughts. Thought is inert. I am not the thought. Somebody else is directing this thought. All this he has figured out. All right? And so the implied meaning of this verse actually is there some factor behind these organs of perception and organs of action? Okay, and pranas coming into organs of action. Is there something behind this gross body and subtle body which is directing? If there is it sentient or inert? Obviously, it should be sentient because how can inert direct inert? Because already mind and eyes and everything is inert, that he has figured out. Now, if we say that the factor that is directing them also is inert, how can inert direct inert? So obviously it must be sentient. If it is sentient, is it finite or infinite? That's the question he's asking now. Really, actually, the meaning, implied meaning. Is it finite or infinite? Then, maybe it is finite, maybe it is infinite. What is my relationship with it? Is it somebody outside? Some finite entity outside which is directing my senses? Is it some infinite entity outside which is directing my senses? What am I to that infinity or finitude, whoever it is? Whatever that factor is there a factor? First thing. Okay, if the factor is there, obviously it must be there because I'm asking you, something is pushing my senses. Is it sentient or inert? Doesn't look like it would be inert because why? Inert cannot direct inert. Must be sentient. If it is sentient, is it finite or infinite? Because Can finite be sentient? Maybe, maybe not, right? Is it finite or infinite? And if it is there, whatever it is, infinite or whatever, of course, since we have studied a little bit of Vedanta, we know that it is infinite, it is sentient, we know all this. What is my relationship with it? This is the student is asking, right? Who am I? Ultimately, it becomes, who am I? Who is directing this? Okay, this is the question. If he had figured out, he has also figured out that the mind cannot be functioning on its own. If you would have thought that the mind is functioning on its own, if you would have thought that the eyes are functioning on its own, he would not have asked this question. Right? Because then he has the answer. Okay, mind has its own thing. It goes as per wherever it wants, it goes. But he figures it out that no, it can't be. All right? The point, another point here is, he also has figured out that this body is an assemblage. See, in all of Bhagavan Shankaracharya's commentaries, he doesn't refer to the body as sharira. Normal word for body is sharira in Sanskrit. He always refers to it as karya, karan, sanghat. I think I've told you this before also. Sanghat is an assemblage. Okay, well, the most common example that comes to my mind is, you know, the car is on the assembly line. That's what they do. They get the wheels and then the frame is there, then the tires are put in, then the steering wheel and the seats and the all the things, right? So on the assembly line, the car gets assembled. Whatever gets assembled, does the car drive itself? Can the car drive itself? No. So whatever is assembled is meant for somebody else, some third party. Okay, who will then drive that car? So an assemblage cannot, if something has been assembled, it cannot drive by itself. If an assembly, if in the car, if the assembly is done, we cannot say that the steering wheel is driving, can drive the car. We cannot say that the gas drives the car. We cannot say that the seats are driving the car. Because without the wheels, of course, the car cannot move. So you can say, oh, no, it's wheels that are. So any part of that assembly cannot drive the whole assembly. That part has to be understood. When a thing is assembled, and the most common example comes to my mind is car, any one part of that car, though without the tires, the car cannot run. Without the steering, the car cannot run. Without gas, the car cannot run. So all these things are needed. Even though they are needed, any one of them cannot by themselves drive the car. So the point is that there is a car which has been assembled and it is meant for a totally third person. Somebody totally different from the car. And that driver will sit in the car and drive. And this is what also he has figured out, that this body is an assemblage. The prakriti from the material, which is made of sattva, rajas and tamas, has taken the material, upadana karana, and then this body has been formed. Okay? So this body is an assembly. So if it is an assembly, any one part of that body cannot drive, direct the body. See, our normal thinking is what? What, as a normal person, I think, oh, I thought about it. This thought came to my mind and then I did action. Right? So where I'm taking the credit for it, right? Every action, we take ownership. I said, I thought of going to the market and buying this or whatever, this or that. And so I went and I did. And the impression that everybody gets and people actually totally, completely believe that I'm in charge of my life. They believe that. They have firm faith that, oh yeah, I decided to get married, so I got married. I decided to have children, so I got it. I decided to buy a house, so I bought a house. I decided to buy a car, this particular car, so I did it. So that's why they get the feeling that I'm the one that's directing myself. Think about it. Right? I am the one that's directing. In actuality, it is not. This is what is being now in this through this question, what is being told to us, that understand, and the student has already understood this, okay, but it is for us to understand that this body cannot drive itself. This mind also, we think that, okay, body is inert, I can understand, but mind is alive. Mind also is not alive. Mind is inert. Mind is inert. Understand, it is made out of matter. Mind is matter. In Chandogya Upanishad, the student, Shvetaketu, is being told this, that mind is matter. So of course he says, and some of you may have this question, yeah, how do you say mind is matter? Why do you say that? So the father, who is the guru there, says, mind is matter because mind depends on matter. Mind depends on matter? What do you mean? Mind depends on food for its nutrition. Really? Yeah, really. This is how come? How do you say that? So he tells Shvetaketu, he says, chant the Vedas. Shvetaketu is very well-educated person, okay? Not a kid or anything. Chant the Vedas, he says. Fine. Shvetaketu, A to Z, no mistakes. Full Vedas chanted. Okay, he says, son, from tomorrow, you will not eat food for 15 days. You will only drink water. Okay, father, because, you know, guru and father telling, fine. So for 15 days, he's not given any food. He doesn't eat any food. He only drinks water. On the 16th day, the father says, okay, chant the Vedas. And he can't. He can't. This is Upanishad, okay? Chandogya Upanishad. He can't. So the father says, son, why on the first day you could chant the Vedas and on the 16th day you can't? Because for 15 days, your mind has not been fed. The food that we eat, please understand, a portion of it goes towards the body, but a portion of it goes to the mind. Mind is therefore matter because it depends on matter for its existence. If you were not to eat food for a few days, your mind would not be functioning properly. Pranas depend on the water. That's why he was told to drink water for 15 days. Pranas will go on, breath will go on, because if you cut off water, pranas will stop. Food, mind will stop. And that is the proof that mind is matter. And if mind is matter, mind cannot direct the body. Because matter cannot direct matter. If there is a chair and two chairs are there, and if I tell one chair, oh, you push that other chair away and then you make room for a third chair, it can't. There has to be a live being pushing those chairs somewhere to make room for the third chair. So this is what now he has figured out, and this is what we have to figure out from this. Since he's asking the question that there is, what is this which is behind this mind is also matter. And even I can't seem to be controlling it. Why? Because I actually want the mind to be here, but my mind is running. How many times, we hands are doing something and the mind is thinking something else? And do I really want my mind to be there? No, I don't. There are thoughts that come to my mind which I don't even want to think. And yet they come. Yet they come. And then say, why did I think of this? Why did this have this, right? So understand that the body is an assemblage and made out of matter, including the mind. And therefore, when I say that, you know, I decided to do this and I did this, no, you didn't do anything. All right. So this is what he's now asking this question. Okay. All this thing he has figured out. He has figured out that whatever this entity is, by its mere will. So it doesn't, it's like in Atmabodh, there is the verse, the sun come, no, not Atmabodh, but it's like, you know, or very, this thing, like we used to sit on the bike and we used to warm up, you know, in the gym before the personal trainer came, right? And we would be talking, both of us, and we're just, yeah, you know, it's not a warm up. We're just, but the minute we'd see them coming, we're like, oh my God, they're coming. Let's start really warming up. Idea is that, you know, when the king comes, then all the subjects will start working. And the king is not doing anything. Now the personal trainer is only walking. The minute we see, we're like, oh my God, she's coming. Now stop talking and let's really work out. This is the idea. That and actually the trainer is not doing it. She probably doesn't even, but just by her mere presence, it is making us work. This is what is being said. Just by the mere presence of this factor, the mind is functioning, the eyes are functioning, the pranas are functioning, organs of action support functioning, etc., etc. All right? Okay? So I'm going to stop here today. We will now go into the answer next time. But if there are any questions.
Jayaji?
Yeah.
I have a question. Just about what you were explaining right now, that mind is inert and mind is matter. So mind cannot do anything. So mind does not work when it is not fed. So I'm thinking about all the rishis who are on fast and they don't eat for a long period of time and they're doing tapas and all that, but their mind is still working. So how does that happen?
One thing, when you say the rishis are doing tapas, do you mean are they in samadhi? They are those rishis not eating anything at all, unless they are in samadhi.
So that, in all the, you know, we read about Dhruva doing 6 months of penance and not standing
on one leg. But that was Dhruva doing tapascharya. Huh? That way even Parvati, finally they were living only on air.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is tapas. That we cannot say for ordinary, like, you know, when you're doing tapas, then you are transcending the body.
Mm.
Because nobody can live, right? So you're transcending, when you transcend the body and the pranas and the mind, then it need not be fed. And when the body is protected, they say, by the totality. Mm. Even Raman Maharshi, for months and months, he remained in that samadhi, right? And the body, nothing happens to the body. The body is maintained.
Mm.
Maintained by the totality. We cannot compare ourselves to that.
Mm-hmm.
That is ghor tapas, right? Just in ordinary day-to-day life, you try doing this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
You understand? Yeah. They were great tapasvis, right? Even Parvati is said to have done great tapas, where she, you know, finally people stand on one leg and don't eat for days. Mm-hmm. You know, so all that is different. But when you ordinarily, if you see, mind is matter. Mind cannot be said to be sentient by itself.
We say that mind is a flow of thoughts.
Yeah.
So that flow means it's running all the time. So it's,
yeah.
So what is driving that running then?
That is what the question is now. That is exactly the question. That is exactly the, like, by who? And the flow of thought, not necessarily the flow is as I want it to be.
Yeah.
Correct? Mm-hmm. Mind is not thinking as I, why do all these funny thoughts come, vulgar thoughts come, bad thoughts come, right? And I'm not a bad person. And yet sometimes those thoughts come, right?
Yeah.
That is what he's asking now. Okay. Like, it is flowing, but I know that it cannot flow on its own.
Mm-hmm.
It is matter. It cannot flow on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody is directing it. As though somebody is directing it, it is going. So what is that?
Mm-hmm.
What is my relationship with it?
Okay.
That is what he's saying. Now the next one will be Kshotrasya Kshotram. There is a year of the year and eye of the eye. And now the teacher will start his teaching, right? So that's what. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. That's what it is. I know it's that's why I'm also going very slowly. For me, I think I'm teaching Ken Upanishad for the first time. I've not done it in Vancouver either, right? So it's not that easy. That's why I had suggested to Ashok that we should do Kathopanishad actually. It would have been a bit simpler, but it's okay. We'll study slowly but surely.
Yeah, the student actually knows much more than us beyond for sure.
Student, all questions, but at least some answers are lit little bit, at least I personally find Kathopanishad much simpler than this one. This is very high text.
Yeah.
So since you guys didn't have the books, it's okay. So we'll get there.
Thank you.
No worries. Jai Ji.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Yes, I have a question. You mentioned that you refer to the student that he has figured out.
I can't hear you.
You mentioned that the student has figured out all these things, but who's asking the question then?
Student only has asked. Student means he has figured out that this body is an assembly. This body is matter. Mind is matter. All that he has figured out.
Yeah. So
now he's asking, he knows somebody else is directing this. Somebody else, there must be something else.
So the something higher is directing him to ask this question?
I suppose. I don't. Yeah. No, it is, you have to understand that the Upanishad is written for us, whom we don't, you know, we are at a level where we don't know. The student probably knows the answers, but it doesn't say. It will say that some students then realized. And then this starts from high and then it kind of goes into a story form. The last chapter of this thing is a story. This Kathopanishad is a straight story. And the reason that story has been given is for those who did not understand all these things in the beginning. Now you just take this simple story and understand it. You'll see that. Yeah. Direct, because somebody is directing him to ask question, right? And it's for our benefit. Even in Bhagavad Gita, when Arjun asked those questions, it is said that he probably knew the answer, but Bhagwan made him ask so that we will know the answer. Because after chapter 2, we wouldn't have understood it, Bhagavad Gita. So that's why Bhagwan inspired him to ask this question so that then we can relate to it more.
Jaya Ji, very respectfully, I will differ a bit here with what you say. What it sounds like that the student has not really figured out what he has not prior knowledge of everything, but he genuinely is asking that what is this? What sends my mind on there and what makes my eyes to see all these questions that we see? And he is genuinely asking that what is that is doing this? Because the answers that follow are clearly indicated that the student is being told that Tadeva Brahmatam Viddhi. So he is maybe basically asking about the knowledge of the Brahman, but yeah, he does not know. And so, of course, he is way higher than us, but maybe he is not still fully, like he's not playing a game that he knows and he's asking, but he is genuinely asking for.
No, that is not what I'm saying. The reason I'm saying is higher than us. If you see the questions of Arjuna and his questions, they're different. They're at a totally different level. He's not asking how I should purify my mind. He's not asking all those questions. He's not asking how I should do karma yoga. He has done it all, which indicates that he has done it all. He has purified, because this is the 9th chapter. So up to 8 chapters, he was there with the guru. Same students were there, like I said, they all are there. And they have done this karma and upasana. They have purified their mind. Now they are saying that we understand that this body is an assemblage, right? And there is something else directing it. And I want to know what it is and I want to know my relationship with it. So he will come, ultimately it is going to go to Tattvamasi only. It has to. There is no other way. Right? But right now, not that way. I just said to Abhimanyu that maybe, but no. The question is genuine. But he is much higher than where we are at right now. But we will also try to go there. Any other question? Okay. So we will start again from 2 next week, next Monday. Okay. And I'll see you next Monday. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.